back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your call. Germany made international headlines last year after Chancellor Angela Merkel announced a plan to shut down all 17 nuclear reactors and replace them with renewable energy, mostly solar and wind power. The decision came in response to the disaster at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant in Japan. In March, the German government made good on its promise by announcing a program to invest $270 billion in renewables. And on May 27th and May 28th, for a few hours, Germany managed to convert the sun's energy to generate 22 gigawatts of power to meet half of the country's energy needs. 22 gigawatts is equivalent to the output of 20 nuclear power plants. According to the Federal Association of the Energy and Water Industry, solar power accounted for 10% of Germany's total electricity production in May. That's an increase of 40% from the previous year. By 2050, Germany plans to meet 80% of its energy needs from renewables. And in comparison, President Obama's New Energy for America plan is aiming for 25% by 2025. California has become the first U.S. state to put more than 1,000 megawatts of solar panels on homes and businesses. And there's a lot of activity around the country at the state level, particularly in California. So on today's Your Call, we are talking about the plan in Germany to swap nuclear for solar and wind power. How are they doing it? And what can we learn from them? Patrick McCulley is an energy expert and executive director of BlackRock Solar. They provide nonprofits, tribes, and underserved communities with access to clean energy education and job training in Nevada. Before coming to Black Solar, Patrick spent 17 years working with International Rivers Network to protect rivers around the world from destructive dams and to promote human rights and sustainable water and energy practices. Hi, Patrick. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks very much.
It's great to have you. And we're also joined by Adam Browning. He's executive director and co-founder of Vote Solar. That's a nonprofit that works to implement programs and policies that allow solar markets to grow. Adam spent 8 years with the Environmental Protection Agency, where he ran the pollution prevention program. Hi, Adam. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. And we're joined by Hans-Josef Fell. He's a spokesperson for energy policy in the Green Party of the German Parliament. He wrote the draft of the Renewable Energy Sources Act, which was adopted in 2000 in the face of strong political opposition. He's author of the book Global Cooling, Strategies for Climate Protection. And Hans-Josef is currently in San Francisco at the InterSolar Conference. Hi, Hans-Josef. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, it's great to have you. So Hans-Josef, why don't we start off with you? Talk a little bit about the announcement that was made last year to shut down all 17 nuclear reactors in Germany. This got a lot of attention at the international level, and I saw it posted on Facebook multiple times.
Yes, we have a very long tradition in Germany that the most people in the society and in the population don't like nuclear power. 80% in polls refuse it. And the people do not say only, we are against nuclear power and we want to protect our climate. They make a lot of new business and a lot of new investing into renewable energies. And so it is a very wonderful success story from the population in Germany. And it is based on the law, the feed-in tariff law, that gives an profitable investment possibility for all these investings.
And so talk a little bit about what the plan is. I understand that a number of nuclear reactors have already been shut down. How many exactly?
Yes, we shut down in 1 month 8 nuclear power reactors, and there were no necessity to have a need in electricity power demand, because we had an increase the last years in solar and wind and biogas that is so great that we could shut down them without any problems in security.
So 8 have been shut down, so that means you've got 9 left, and the plan is to shut those down over the next 10 or so years.
And the law designs in about 10 years we will close down the rest one. But I believe it could happen earlier because the increase of renewables is so fast that we can replace much more. And the nuclear power comes more and more under pressure because of the economic issues. Renewable energies are so cheap because they are fuel-free that they can compete on an economic way with nuclear power and with fossil power from coal power, that they get a cheaper electricity price to the population, and this makes that all a lot of the other power producers have to close down their production.
Patrick McCulley, what was your reaction when you heard about Germany's plan?
I think it's terrific. You know, Germany is really a leader globally on clean energy, and the German Green Party and the German anti-nuclear and clean energy activists have been a fantastic example to the rest of the world. I think the world really owes Germany a big thank you for what they've done, especially on solar power. It's really where, you know, Germany is the world leader in solar power, and by investing in solar themselves, they've brought down the prices worldwide. They really helped the technology along, and they've made it much set an example for the rest of the world, and made the cost of solar much cheaper, so made it much easier for everybody else to start catching up with them.
And Adam, what about you? What was your reaction when you heard about Germany's plan?
I absolutely agree. What Germany is showing is that it is in fact possible. There is so much out there that is an unknown. But, you know, with this transition to renewable energy, can we keep the grid up? Can renewables really achieve this future that we've been promising? And when we hear policymakers in the United States say, no, it can't be done, or utilities in the United States saying, you know, oh, sun's only there when the sun shines, very unreliable, we're able to point to another place where it is, in fact, being done, and what already exists is possible. So it's interesting, here in California, earlier this year, even though, you know, you hear a lot of utilities give renewables a rap for being unreliable, earlier this spring, we had all four of the nuclear reactors in the state offline for a significant period of time in the San Onofre nuclear generating system down in Southern California. It will be offline for the indefinite future. And you know what? The renewables are going to be the one that provides the majority of the new generation going forward. So in our smaller way, we hope to replicate what Germany's already undertaking.
And Hans Josef, let's talk a little bit about the politics. So Germany, it's about 81, 82 million people is the population. What's the political coalition in Germany that has backed the push for renewables?
Firstly, it came from the NGO movement, the grassroots movement, to go to renewable energies. And this movement runs from the 70s last century. But there was in the 80s a foundation of the Green Party because of the politics did not go to renewables. Instead, they went to nuclear and to coal power. And this foundation of the Green Party made it possible that we, together with the Social Democratic Party, in 2000, we decided to nuclear phase out and to increase the renewables. In the beginning, in 2000, we had opposition from the conservatives and liberals. But in the meantime, we see that the renewable energies have such a big impact to the economy. We could increase the employment from 30,000 employers into 380,000 today within one decade. And this high impact on the economy now leads that the conservatives and liberals also support renewable energies and support the Renewable Energy Feed-in Act. And so it can go on with a complete support of the old political party in Germany to phase out nuclear and to go to renewables.
And is there much opposition? I understand that when you drafted the Renewable Energy Sources Act in 2000, you did face strong political opposition. How do you deal with that in Germany?
Yes, we had strong opposition, and we have it partly anymore. This opposition comes from the old utilities who make the business with nuclear and with coal. They fear to their business, and this fear is right, because when renewables will make the transition, this business cannot go on. But the society wants it. The people want it. The economy mostly wants it on a decentralized level. And so we could overcome this opposition. But now we have a new development. The second biggest power producer in Germany, RWE, announced since some weeks that they want to switch their business away from nuclear power, even abroad, away from coal power, and they want to invest also in solar power. Huh. So this opposition will decrease any more and much more in Germany too.
And that is Hans-Josef Fell. He's a spokesperson for energy policy in the Green Party of the German Parliament. He's in town for in San Francisco for the Intersolar Conference. He wrote the draft of the Renewable Energy Sources Act, and he's author of Global Cooling, Strategies for Climate Protection. We're also joined by Adam Browning, Executive Director and Co-Founder of Vote Solar, and Patrick McCulley, Executive Director of BlackRock Solar. And Hans-Josef will be with us for about 15 more minutes. So if you have any questions for him about what the political climate is like in Germany, how they plan to move forward with shutting down 9 of their nuclear reactors. They've already shut down 8 of them. And the plan is to meet about 80% of their energy needs from renewables by 2050. So if you have any questions for Hans-Josef, and, you know, really, what can we learn from what happened in Germany, and how can we apply that to California, for example? 866-798-8255. If you work in the solar industry, we'd love to hear from you. What sorts of changes are you seeing? 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And Patrick, I'm wondering if you have a question for Hans-Josef about the climate in Germany.
You know, actually, I just wanted to put into perspective just how great the achievement of Germany is in solar power, and just which shows just how much potential, how much further we have to go in this country. Mm. Which is that, you know, relative to the United States, Germany is a pretty small and cloudy country. the U.S. is about 28 times larger than Germany. Mm-hmm. Berlin is further north than Saskatoon. So we have a massively greater solar resource in the United States. And yet, in the U.S., the solar generation as a percentage of U.S. total power production is less than 0.1%. And now here in Germany, you know, it's about 10% in May. So another statistic is last year, the Germans installed about 4 times more solar power than we did in the whole of the United States. So clearly, there's an awful lot more that we can do here. I mean, things are picking up here, and you know, solar power is booming in terms of installations. But there's a lot more we can do, and there's a lot of need for better policies that can promote solar, so that we can see the sort of clean energy and economic advantages that Germany has experienced.
And Patrick, just listening to Hans-Josef talk about the political climate in Germany and how they overcame opposition, what do you think we can learn from Germany?
I mean, clearly we have a big problem here with our political climate and this sort of, you know, hard right, nutcase opposition to clean energy. And that's something which is, you know, Germany didn't really have. The original renewable energy law in Germany from 1990 was a Christian Democrat Green Party initiative. And, you know, Germany, there has been quite a lot of support across the spectrum. And that's a thing we don't see so much in this country. Some places we see it, you know, there definitely are places where the Republican Party, or let's say Republicans, realize the economic advantages from clean energy. And, you know, I've heard some interesting things. Friends in the residential solar industry say that their best clients in terms of getting solar installed in their house and then promoting it to all their neighbors and friends, and the most sort of leads that they get from word of mouth are actually come from people who identify themselves as Republicans, because the whole sort of energy independence argument resonates with them. So I think there are ways that we can switch the political climate regarding solar here, but it's definitely the degree of partisanship and the sort of the whole anti-science, anti-rationality position of the extreme right here makes it a lot more difficult.
And Hans-Josef, you wanted to jump in there?
Yes. We have now very new experience in Germany. The most people believe that renewables are very expensive and they would be a burden for the economy. We see it otherwise at the moment. We have a decreasing of the electricity price at the stock market. And this decreasing comes because the renewable energy is fuel-free except for biogas, but solar and wind need no fuel. And this fuel price rising, especially oil price and coal price, and utilities are forced to rise their electricity price. So we had a rise for the household price last year about from 1 euro cent per kilowatt hour, but including of the decreasing of renewable energy was also only 0.02 euro cent per kilowatt hour. So we see that investing into renewable and come to a cheaper electricity price than go on with the conventional energy. This is an astonishing
Hans-Joseph, I'm sorry, we're having a little problem with your line. I think we'll have to let you go soon because it might be ours or yours. We're not sure. But I did want to ask you one more question before we let you go. You are at this conference in San Francisco. Can you talk about some of the conversations you're having with people at the solar conference about, I'm sure they've got so many questions about how Germany was able to do this and what we can learn from you. What do those conversations sound like?
Yes, this conversation goes mostly with the company CEOs or with politicians, with people from NGO level, and they also see that the German success is combined with the feed-in tariff law. California and USA has no feed-in tariff law, and therefore the increasing into renewables, into solar and wind is very, very slowly. And the feed-in tariff law would be the best basic to overcome the obstacles coming from the old utilities against the competition of renewables.
And also, what advice would you have for environmental activists here as they're dealing with a government that's not very friendly to alternative energy? At California, we have a very different situation.
No, California has no different situation. We have much more solar radiation than Germany, and you have much more wind at the coastline than on your mountains.
Right.
So investing into renewables would become even cheaper than in Germany, and so it would be a best possibility to overcome your energy problems with rising oil prices.
All right. Well, thank you, Hans-Joseph. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. That is Hans-Joseph Fell. He is a spokesperson for energy policy in the Green Party of the German Parliament. He wrote the draft of the Renewable Energy Sources Act, which was adopted in 2000 in the face of strong political opposition. He's in San Francisco at the Intersolar Conference. He'll be speaking today at 2 o'clock about his new book, Global Cooling, Strategies for Climate Protection. And today we are talking about Germany making headlines after Chancellor Merkel announced a plan to shut down all 17 nuclear reactors and replace them with mostly solar and wind power. So far, they have shut down 8 and they've got 9 to go. And we're joined today to talk about what happened in Germany, what we can learn from them, and will California eventually follow suit? Patrick McCulley is an executive director of Black Rock Solar, and Adam Browning is executive director of Vote Solar. So, Adam, what are your thoughts about what we can really learn from what's going on in Germany? Adam?
Apologies, I put you on mute.
No, that's okay.
I got caught up in that. You know, as I said before, I think one of the most exciting things is that we have a shining example of what is possible, and that is very helpful in helping to erase doubts and to contradict the naysayers in saying that it can't, in fact, be done. California is pursuing a parallel but different path towards developing its renewable energy resources. Currently, the state's at about 20% renewable energy. But as Hans-Joseph was clear in pointing out, the potential is so much more. And that's a good thing if we're going to effectively deal with our climate challenge. We need to get up into double and triple that in terms of percentiles. So in California, every California has the option right now of generating their own electricity, achieving that personal renewable energy independence. And that policy has been quite successful in terms of having a system of declining incentives that are taking us to the point where right now it is in most places in the state cheaper for you to generate your own electricity going solar rather than buying it from the utility. We're at that point of grid parity where we can have an independent industry that no longer requires the same sort of incentive and subsidy. And that's been the holy grail. The whole goal here is to get to the point where we don't have to ask policymakers for money to transform the industry, but rather the industry can continue to thrive and grow on its own. So it's a really exciting time right now that we're at that grid parity transformation point as we see new innovation in technology and financing structures, giving people new opportunities to go forward. If you'd like, I'm happy to talk about some of the current legislation in the state legislature that would provide some new pathways, or perhaps you'd like to hear about that.
Sure, go ahead. That'd be great.
So one bill that we're particularly excited about is called SB 843, and it's a bill that would provide for community solar. Currently, right now, if you own your own house with your own roof, you can go solar, but what if you're a renter? What if you have big trees over your house and don't have a roof that's suitable for putting solar on? Well, this bill would allow you to invest in an off-site solar system and have that economic benefit flow to you. So it's about providing new opportunities for expanding participation in the solar economy. Made it quite a way so far through the legislature, but it is not through yet.
And so how would that work? So if I'm a renter, how much would I invest and how would I benefit from this?
Well, we've seen a couple of different models in some other states, one being in Colorado, and then another effort in Washington, D.C. And right now, actually in Sacramento, SMUD has a option that they call solar shares. Each of these models works a little differently. So in SMUD, I'm sorry for the acronym, that's the Sacramento Municipal Utilities District. If you buy pay a surcharge or for a set price on your bill, you would buy a portion of the output from a larger central station community-owned system, and they would model it as if it were already on your roof. You would get the retail equivalent. This bill isn't quite as, I would say, economically beneficial to you in that it would allow you to replace the sort of the generation component of your bill with being able to directly purchase the renewable output of a solar system that it would be, again, sited off-site. So you would still pay, the distribution and the transmission charges, but you would be able to replace the dirty fossil fuel generation with clean renewables.
All right. And again, that is SB 843, if you want more information on that. And we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about the Solar for All bill. And we'll also find out what is happening here in California. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. It's your call. We'll be back after this.
Hello, this is Chuck Finney of Your Legal Rights. If you or a family member is experiencing a serious medical problem, please join me this Wednesday evening on Your Legal Rights. My guest will be Linda Kramer, Chair of the Estate Planning Advisory Commission of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. We'll talk about the importance of an advanced health directive and estate planning when a family is experiencing a medical crisis. That's this Wednesday evening at 7 on Your Legal Rights here on 91.7 KLW San Francisco.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. You can find more information about our show at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up. Tomorrow, we'll have a conversation about seeds. What is at stake with the loss of seed biodiversity? We'll speak with Janice Ray about her new book, The Seed Underground, A Growing Revolution to Save Food. 94% of seed varieties have been lost forever. And so we'll talk about what this means and how we can save the seeds we have left. And then on Thursday, we will talk about the importance of sleep. That is a very important topic, the importance of sleep on Thursday. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about renewable energy. Germany is about to shut down all of their 17 nuclear reactors. They've already shut down 8. They've got 9 to go. This came in response to the disaster at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. And their plan is to meet 80% of their energy needs from renewables by 2050. And so we're talking about how they went about it, what this will look like, and what can we learn from Germany, specifically here in California. We just became the first state to put more than 1,000 megawatts of solar panels on homes and businesses. So if you have any questions about renewable energy, if you have questions about what's happening in Germany, what can we learn from them? If you work in the solar or wind industry, what sorts of changes are you seeing? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. If you've installed solar panels or you're thinking about it, how are you going about it? What's the experience been like? 866-798-8255. You can also post a comment to yourcallradio.org or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. So, Patrick, what else would you like to tell us about what's happening in California? How significant is this? We recently became the first state to put more than 1,000 megawatts of solar panels on homes and businesses. What does that mean exactly?
It means we're leading the way in the U.S. in promoting solar, and that other states are watching California. And it means, like sort of Germany has done before in terms of a global example, we are creating an example for United States. And also it's important to have leaders like California, because we are showing that, as Adam was saying, that the naysayers who say, oh, you can't have more than a certain percentage of solar, and you have too much solar, you have too much wind, and the whole grid is going to break down, that actually, technically, renewable generation works, and that it's very popular, and that it creates jobs, and that it boosts economies. There was one really interesting study which just came out in the last month, I think, from a bunch of federal researchers, especially the National Renewable Energy Lab in Colorado, showing that by 2050, the U.S. could have 80% of its electricity from renewable sources, mainly solar and wind and biomass. And there wouldn't be any problems in terms of electricity reliability, which is always what is said by the big utilities and others, that, you know, the problem with solar is that it can generate at night, and the problem with wind is it can't generate on a still day. But when you have a dispersed resource and you have the proper connection and you have some backup from gas for those rare times when you don't have renewables online, that you can have a clean energy system. And that study also is showing that you can do it with only basically existing technologies, so no breakthrough technologies like big floating wind turbines far out at sea, which theoretically could generate a huge amount of energy, or there's new geothermal energies being developed, which hold a lot of promise. But even without those sorts of breakthroughs, and you got to believe that by 2050 there will be some pretty significant breakthroughs, that we could go almost totally renewable, with solar a large part of that, but also a lot of wind in the mix, and geothermal and biomass. So really the constraints that we have, and as Adam was saying earlier, you know, the price of solar is coming down very fast, and we're reaching in more and more electricity markets, we're reaching what the solar wonks called parity, where it's actually cheaper to have solar on your rooftop than just pay your electricity bill. And as that happens, as more places reach grid parity and solar becomes increasingly cheaper than grid electricity, you know, this start of the boom that we're seeing now is really going to explode. And I think in like 5 years' time, the solar industry is going to be many times bigger in the United States than it is now. And we can just hope that, you know, there is sufficient government support to really accelerate this takeoff, because, you know, the issue we have now with climate change is so extreme that, you know, we can't just wait for solar to sort of take off of its own accord. We really should have as much government support as possible to make it happen.
Well, we have a listener who just installed solar on his home. So let's hear from Jeff in San Jose. Hi, Jeff. Hello, Jeff. Sorry about that, Jeff. If you can give us a call back, thank you for calling in. Let's hear from Harvey in Berkeley. Hi, Harvey.
Hello, Rose and Patrick and Adam. Thanks for this great show. I have a question for you, but first I'd like to make a couple comments about solar. Solar, you know, once the solar panels are made, they create no emissions, they use no water. The four horsemen of the apocalypse, coal, nuclear, natural gas, and oil, use a trillion gallons of water off our lakes, rivers, and oceans to cool them down. They make no noise. There's a lot of noise pollution around. They have no moving parts to wear down, and they don't use foreign-sourced fuel. In fact, once the panel is made, the fuel is free from the sun. Over the lifetime of the panel, it's 20, 30 years, and if you add up how much it costs you for gasoline or every month and your electric bill, and then add that up for 20 years, you'll see that it's the gift of a lifetime. So I say let's get solar. And my question is, the feed-in tariff here, I think it's really low in California, whereas that's the feed-in tariff is the price that the utilities pay for extra energy that your solar system produces. And in Germany, I think they have a premium. They pay a premium price for the feed-in tariff. And I was wondering if you knew the price that Germany pays for its clean energy from the rooftops and the price we pay here in California. And can we move to a German-like feed-in tariff for our solar energy? Thank you.
All right, thank you. And I believe that passed in California in 2008. Adam, can you take that question?
Sure. So, you know, perhaps Patrick has more accurate numbers here on Germany, but, you know, they started with a feed-in tariff that was upwards of 60 cents per kilowatt hour. So you get a 20-year contract, and everything that you sold to the utility, you would get, again, somewhere around 57, 60 cents per kilowatt hour. And that's been digressing rapidly to the point where they're now at around 20, 21 cents per kilowatt hour, which, interestingly, is just about their point of retail grid parity. So we're actually seeing an explosion right now in systems in Germany where people are self-consuming, where they're economically advantaged by generating their own electricity and not selling it to the utility, but rather avoiding having to, you know, generate it for their own usage and having to buy their own electricity. But no doubt the feed-in tariff just drove the global solar industry across the board. So, as you point out, in California it's quite different. And typically we've had a couple of different feed-in tariffs that have worked at different price points. Sacramento had one at 14 cents per kilowatt hour, and it sold out instantly.
So again, just to be clear, so feed-in tariffs, it financially compensates solar energy producers for contributing electricity to the grid?
Exactly, on a set schedule, typically over 20 years. So it's, you know, you then become a wholesale power producer. You are not, if you install a system under a feed-in tariff, you're not generating it for your own usage. You are selling all your output to the utility, similar to if you were a power producer of any other sort. So it's really a radical redesign where, you know, in Germany they've got nearly a million small wholesale power producers throughout the entire country, and absolutely, you know, decentralizing the whole power generation system. So that had, I would say, great social equity transformative effect as well.
And how big is this system in California?
The feed-in tariff program?
Yeah.
So we do not have a comprehensive or really a feed-in tariff program that works for the residential size systems. And there are many reasons for this, but principally it's because the larger systems, the utilities are buying larger amounts of solar power from much larger systems at rates that are well below the retail rates. It's the path that our politicians have chosen to go. So,
and are there many programs like this across the country in other states?
There are here and there. Again, in the past, and I expect to see a lot more going forward. Our principal, I would say, barrier to establishing these programs has been the higher cost of solar. Solar has gone through a transformative reduction in its cost. The price of the panels has gone down from $4 a watt to about $1 a watt since 2008. So really, in four short years, we've seen just this huge reduction. So right now, the Palo Alto Municipal Utility System has just started a feed-in tariff program with 4 megawatts. There's been a huge push in Los Angeles, and they're developing a feed-in tariff system that will, again, buy renewable energy from much smaller power producers.
And what explains the cost reduction?
The global cost reduction, I think, was can be explained really by economies of scale and by countries such as Germany as well as the U.S. investing so much into market demand that we saw a lot of private capital go into, again, developing much larger manufacturing facilities and also developing new technology. I would say and this goes throughout the whole value chain. So for most solar is based upon silicon as the raw material. Many years ago, all the way back to 2004, there were only 7 manufacturing facilities in the entire world that were capable of producing solar-grade silicon. And then, now there are many times that amount with, again, this demand driver that was shown by these foresightful governments. So now solar manufacturers have gotten a lot larger. They've gotten much more capable of of harvesting more light, using much less silicon. And then there's been technology development throughout the entire value chain, from making installations much more simple to install to the whole racking systems using less material and making much less labor intensive.
And doesn't China have something to do with this? Because there's an interesting article at Clean Technica. Mm-hmm. It says the global solar marketplace has a huge glut of solar panels and solar cells. This is the top reason why solar panel prices have plunged. China's tremendous manufacturing output is certainly a big part of this oversupply.
I would absolutely agree. If you look at the history of the price of solar modules, when Germany started their feed-in tariff in 2004, actually the price of modules went up because there was so much demand. And it wasn't until 2008 when we saw the Chinese really come on the market and really, for the first time ever, you had more manufacturing capacity than you had demand, that we really saw competition and prices go down.
Right. And is it safe to say that if you're manufacturing the solar panel in China, obviously that you're not, that the cost is much lower than if you would manufacture in California, for example?
There is definitely a cost difference, but I would say a solar panel manufactured in California has a transportation advantage, and I would also say that the U.S. is competing really on technology advantages. We see so it's it's not a cut and dried advantage for the Chinese manufacturers, although they are certainly surging globally as being the largest supplier of solar to the world.
And just quickly, Patrick, what would you add to that? It's just fascinating to watch things change in China. And according to this Clean Technica article, China is looking to help relieve this glut of solar panels by quadrupling its 2015 solar power targets.
Yeah, I think, China comes under a lot of criticism for, unfairly subsidizing its solar panels. But I think, like, we should all be thankful for what Germany has done in terms of increasing demand for solar. We should all be thankful for what China has done in terms of bringing the price down. The Chinese government has invested something like $40 billion in their solar industry. And that's helped to greatly expand production of modules, and that's, you know, the main reason, I would say, behind this massive fall in price that Adam was referring to. It's happened over the last few years, and that's created a lot of jobs in the United States because of the low prices have created a boom in installation. So there are about 100,000 jobs in the U.S. solar industry now, and the vast majority of those are in installation. You know, it's actually getting people up on roofs and into fields and banging posts into the ground and putting modules onto them, as well as producing a lot of the other components like the racking systems and the wires and the nuts and the bolts and all the little bits of equipment you need to have a working solar array. So I think it's, you know, it's very good what China has done. And I think in the United States, we shouldn't be trying to compete with China on the production of these crystalline silicon modules, which are the common solar modules that you see everywhere. There's other more higher tech technologies that the U.S. is U.S. companies are investing in and where the U.S. can compete. But in terms of its basic solar, the sort of workhorse crystalline silicon solar module, I think we should be very happy that Chinese companies are producing so much of them and driving the price down. And I think it's good for all of us, good for the climate, it's good for the U.S. economy, it's good for jobs, good for the solar industry worldwide.
And the top five countries for total installed solar power capacity: Germany, Italy, Japan, Spain, and then the U.S. China is just behind the U.S., but do you think, Patrick, they might pass the U.S. in the next couple of years with all of this?
Yeah, I think it's very likely. China, you know, they set up this capacity to serve their export markets, but now they're realizing that, you know, now they have this capacity. In fact, they have overcapacity, so they need to soak it up. Plus, China has renewable energy targets that are quite progressive and ambitious, and so there are numerous big solar arrays getting built in China now. They have them with wind power, where wind power, you know, really started in a large scale in California in the 70s and then spread over to Europe. And now China is one of the leaders in wind power and has a number of the biggest wind power companies and is now exporting their turbines to other parts of the world. And we're going to see the same thing in solar. China is going to be a solar giant, and we can all be very thankful for that, because, you know, the more solar power they have, then the less coal they're going to be burning and the less air pollution and climate change we're going to see.
And that is Patrick McCulley. He is executive director of Black Rock Solar, and they provide nonprofits, tribes, and underserved communities with access to clean energy education and job training. We're also joined by Adam Browning, executive director and co-founder of Vote Solar, a nonprofit that works to implement programs and policies that allow solar markets to grow. And we have about 5 or so minutes left. So if you'd like to get a question or comment in about solar and wind and renewables, we're talking about what's happening in Germany. They're going to shut down their nuclear reactors by maybe the next couple of years, according to our earlier guest. They've shut down 8 so far. They have 9 to go. So we're talking about what we can learn from Germany and what is happening specifically here in California. 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. And let's go next to Michelle, who is calling in from Environment California. Hi, Michelle. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. I was calling just basically to kind of get to the bottom line, which I think at the end of the day, when you look at both the experience of California and Germany, what you see is that it's a combination of political will and investment that bears fruit at the end of the day. And I think if you look at both of these scenarios, you'll see that the investment in solar really is bearing fruit. As you've mentioned, the state of California has now achieved this benchmark of installing more than 1,000 megawatts of solar across the state. And that's, you know, as you said, all but five nations worldwide, more than all but five nations worldwide. And that's employing more than 25,000 Californians. So we're really seeing that the investment that we've made to date in solar is bearing fruit. And looking forward in California, we have a really exciting goal that Governor Brown has put forth, which is to increase our local clean power 12-fold by 2020. And that's a goal that Environment California is excited about and is working to see turned into reality. And I think there are a number of bills before the legislature this session, including SB 843 that Adam mentioned earlier and AB 1990 that was mentioned briefly, that can each in their own specific ways really expand our access to solar power. And we need to keep pushing forward and developing new expansive policies that will get us to that goal so that we can hold our own in the rankings with Germany.
And Michelle, I'm glad you brought up 1990, the Solar for All bill, which we briefly touched on. So this passed the Assembly on May 30th. It would create a feed-in tariff system designed specifically for low-income communities of color, and it would require the state to install
test of the KCBS emergency alert system equipment. This is only a test.
Day, which is tremendous in and of itself. And so we are, you know, supportive of this bill for the fact that we do believe that it can really help bridge the gap to bring solar within the realm of possibility for some of our more disadvantaged communities.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Michelle.
Thank you.
That's Michelle with Environment California. And again, the bills are SB 843, and then the Solar for All bill is AB 1990. And let's hear from our next caller, Lisa in Berkeley. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I wanted to suggest that all the flat roofs in cities are not being used. It seems as though solar has been expected to be on individual homes with trees around them, homes that were built, you know, maybe in the beginning of last century. It doesn't make sense. I've seen them on parking, shading parking lots up on off of 505, and that seems to be very sensible. Take the places where the heat is sinking in and on flat roofs that make it design worthy, more sensible.
So, Lisa, you're asking for common sense solutions,
yeah.
Right?
Yes. And it could be in a very large scale way. The enormous, huge flat roofs all of cities.
Right. And bus stop terminals. I mean, there's so many options here. Adam, what about just basic common sense solutions? Adam?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Got it. I think Lisa is absolutely right. And if I could add to that, I would just say that one particular we have seen cities lead the way on installing solar. In California, in particular, we've seen schools really lead the way to the point where we're seeing serious benefits in terms of keeping more teachers in the classrooms. If you look at all the schools in California that have gone solar, and they've got those large, big, flat roofs, as well as the parking structures as well, and you calculate the energy savings from those installations, that's over $1.5 billion
Wow.
worth of utility bill savings. And that money goes back to, that'll buy a lot of chalk. So when we think about this transition to renewable energy, I think it's also important to think about how many of our institutions, our taxpayer institutions, are benefiting from being able to source their electricity through a long-term, low-cost generating resources. Again, in many places in California right now, you can go solar more cheaply than buying it from your local utility, and that's absolutely transformative.
Well, and this speaks to Ishwar's question, and I'm sorry, Ishwar, we're almost out of time, but I'll ask your question. He's interested in solar for his home. What tips can you give him and others who are interested?
Well, clearly you should call up BlackRock Solar, if I throw a tip out to Patty. As a nonprofit, we do not endorse a singular place to get it. I would simply ask that you get a couple of different quotes. You can go on to the California Public Utilities Commission and get a link to a website that will show you the list of certified installers if you are interested in that. And a quick little bit of internet research will, you know, allow you to find some of the leading installers. Just ask more than one for their best quote and take it from there.
All right.
And if I just say, just sure. Before I start getting lots of phone calls, that BlackRock Solar doesn't do residential installations. Our installations are for nonprofits and schools and tribes and so on. But I'd say if you're interested in going solar in California, the most interesting option and the market where there's the greatest interest right now is in solar leases, where you get a system built on your house and the solar company actually owns the system for 10 years and they handle the maintenance and everything. But instead of paying your bill to PG&E or whatever your utility is, you pay the solar company. And as Adam is saying, a lot of parts of California now, not all parts, but a lot of parts, especially the hotter parts, and for people who are the higher power consumers, you can save money straight away and you've no money down. And if you go to the Google and just do a search for solar leases, all those companies will come up. Longevity is a very well-known one now based in Oakland. Also Solar City, which is a big national company now, and there's a number of other ones. And just to do a little plug for BlackRock Solar, if you go with Longevity and mention BlackRock Solar, we're a nonprofit and we'll get a donation from Longevity if your system is built.
All right, great. And we've got links at our website, and we will continue this conversation. There's a lot of things going on across the country, and it's important to always focus on what's happening. Thank you so much. Patrick McCauley is Executive Director of BlackRock Solar, and Adam Browning is Executive Director and Co-Founder of Vote Solar. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much.
And thanks for your phone calls and emails. Thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. What's at stake with the loss of seed biodiversity? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation with Janice Ray, author of The Seed Underground, A Growing Revolution to Save Food. Of the thousands of seed varieties available at the turn of the 20th century, 94% have been lost forever. So how can we save the seeds we have left? Join us at 10 or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. What is your relationship with seeds? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast or newsletter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is the executive producer. Pete Misick is our web editor and Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and produced by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.